We will table the British Open talk for just a little bit because right now it is time to go inside the ropes.
For a quick look at a number of hot topics in the world of golf this week, let's go inside the ropes.
It is the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. And it is brought to you, as always, by PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number one, Peter. Of course, the LPGA Tour is in a huge state of flux over the last month. Carolyn Bivens, who had been the commissioner over the last 4 years since late 2005, player revolt ending Bivens' stormy four-year run as commissioner. Many believe that not only is a new commissioner needed, but a new business model as well. Board member Rear Admiral Marcia Evans, not my relative, has been named the acting commissioner. She is a retired Navy. She's retired from the Navy after 30 years in the Navy. In 2005, she became a board member of the LPGA Tour. Also, Zyra Calderon, the Tour's senior vice president and the CEO of the DuraMed Futures Tour, will take on the task of retaining existing sponsors and securing new ones. As for possible candidates for a replacement for Carolyn Bivens, some of the names that have been mentioned are Cindy Davis, president of Nike Golf. She is also a former executive at the Golf Channel. Donna Orender, president of the WNBA and a former PGA Tour executive. And Robert Neal, a former LPGA official who is now working with the Tournament Golf Foundation, which owns two LPGA events. Peter, your thoughts of the situation right now on the LPGA Tour?
Russ, I'm in the vast minority here with Carolyn Bivens. I think, you know, Carolyn Bivens came in at a point in time when the LPGA, which was not a very marketable product, did not have a very big fan base, came in when the product was soaring. She got there right when all the young kids were coming up. It had a product that would sell. She stepped up and she took on a very aggressive business position to try and capture the value of the brand. She was going to retain control of the licensing. She was going to get back control of the product, and she tried to increase the purses for the players. Now, had economic Armageddon not befallen the United States and the rest of the world, I think there would be a very different outlook right now. It's very easy for sponsors to walk away from golf tournaments or any kind of sponsorship package when you're in a point in time when you've got huge bottom line problems. And what are you going to cut? I mean, it's happened to every other product. I mean, NASCAR's been cut because of GM's bankruptcy. The PGA Tour has sponsorship question marks. They were well positioned just because of where the contracts ran out. The Champions Tour has lost sponsorships all over the years, and their schedule has been cut back. I mean, while she may have been brash and she may have not garnered a lot of fans within her ranks, if the economy wasn't what it is, it'd be a very different story right now.
Well, there's no doubt that a struggling economy was really one of the nails in her coffin. Since 2008, seven U.S.-based tournaments have folded on the LPGA Tour. Another scheduled for this year was pushed into 2010, and the China event in October still has neither a course nor a sponsor. Four other tournaments, including the LPGA Championship and the Tour Championship, have no sponsor for 2010. And core events such as Rochester, Toledo, Phoenix, and Williamsburg have yet to renew their contracts. So there's no doubt that the struggling economy is a big part of that. But I fault her for a lot of decisions. Primarily the decision to raise renewal prices for sponsors in this crappy economy. I know for a fact that's why ADT left the LPGA Tour. And that hit us locally. That was one of our three local South Florida LPGA tournaments. One was in Aventura at Turnberry. One was, of course, at Trump International here in West Palm Beach. The final event of the year, it was a huge event, the ADT Championship, and then there was another event in Orlando, the GIN Championship. Her decision to raise renewal prices for sponsors is why ADT left, and that's why we no longer have a tournament at Trump International.
All right, and the Ginn tournament is gone. Because of Carolyn Bivens, but because of Bobby Ginn.
Of course.
And the Turnberry event was Stanford. And that's not her fault either.
Good point.
English only was a bad decision. That was horrible.
I was going to get to that. Her decision to raise renewal prices for sponsors, not the only bad decision. Deciding to try to go English only, speaking on the LPGA Tour, and the first time she announces it at a grouping of only Korean players, I mean, how dumb can you be? And then encouraging players to Twitter during rounds of golf. All the players, Paula Kramer came out and said it was asinine for that idea to be levied on them. And then, of course, you mentioned trying to take back efforts to take back licensing. The first time she announced the LPGA Tour's decision to own all of their media, including photographs, was at the first tournament in Hawaii. And media outlets had a problem with that, being informed about this new policy on the LPGA Tour at the first event of the year, instead of giving some lead time on it. I just think that she was brash, and she had a lot of questionable decisions. And in my opinion, the LPGA Tour will be a better tour when there's new leadership in place.
Well, I hope you're right. I mean, the product is clearly getting much better. It got the double whammy. I mean, Annika decides to retire, and God bless her. I hope she and Mike are doing real well, and the baby's on the way, and I wish her all the best. But this would, as far as the product's concerned, it certainly would be nice to have Annika on the tour right now. And the economy is going to kill that tour, or is killing the tour. Hopefully they'll turn it around and some new leadership. Look, you know, you blame the coach. When teams aren't winning, they fire the coach.
Well, it's easier than to fire 25 players.
Correct. Right? So maybe it'll have the same effect. New leadership, all of a sudden everybody will get happy about it, and you'll have some new sponsors, and life will be good again on the LPGA.
You mentioned Annika, and she has been she's been asked to be one of the consultants for the LPGA Tour as they look for a new leader. All right, topic number two. Jack Nicklaus in the news. He said earlier this week, quote, "Guys on the PGA Tour talking about we don't have enough time to practice with these new V-grooves for next year." He says he believes the adjustments won't prove much more than a tiny bit difficult. After all, he made them every year and won 3 British Open titles. Jack said, quote, "Goodness gracious, we left here for the British Open, changed to a small ball, used 7 clubs from a different manufacturer, changed in a day and went and played the tournament," he said, "and won and were successful." Jack is just surprised that a lot of these PGA tours are bellyaching over the change from U-grooves to V-grooves. Peter, your thoughts on the Golden Bear taking some shots at today's, quote, soft tour pros?
I have no idea what he means about the 7 new clubs. That's just not in my vocabulary, but I agree with him. Look, every year, the equipment manufacturers are building new drivers, new irons. The technology keeps changing. And the guys, they put a new driver in their bag almost every year. They upgrade their driver. They change irons. You know what the real belly aching is? They don't like the concept of having to hit it out of the rough and start catching flyers again. They like the fact that they can control their irons out of the rough. So I think it's a good change. We'll see what happens. And frankly, I don't think there's going to be a huge difference. The best players in the world are still going to hit it close.
Well, one of the players not bellyaching about the change is Tiger Woods. He is, as soon as Tim Fincham announced that the PGA Tour will adapt to the new USGA regulations, Tiger said, great, you know, we'll take a look at the new wedges, and we'll definitely be ready by January 1st, 2010. My problem with the PGA Tour pros is they were delaying, you know, experimenting with these new V-grooves until Tim Fincham adapted the USGA rules. That was a bad move. They should have been thinking ahead to start with. The USGA first announced that they were thinking of changing to V-grooves in 2005, 4 years ago. Now, the PGA Tour was balking, and the players were trying to convince Tim Fincham to balk at this and not accept the new regulations. But a couple of weeks ago, Fincham announced that he would accept the regulations. Now, all these players that were saying, oh, it's okay, we'll convince Tim to lobby the USGA and the equipment companies, and we'll be able to keep our U-grooves. Well, now that the PGA Tour has adopted it, now all of a sudden it's July, and tour pros are saying, oh my God, this is really going to happen January 1st. We only have 5 months. You know, they should stop bellyaching as far as I'm concerned.
You know,
they should get in step.
The players aren't without precedent here. I mean, let's go back to when Ping first came out with the square grooves, and you had
Carsten Solheim.
They had the legal challenges, and they never wound up being banned, and they figured out some way to measure the grooves so that they were compliant. I don't, you know, players don't like change. There's no doubt about that. but they change all the time when it suits them. Look, if you tell a player, hey, I got a new endorsement deal for you. It's a new $1 million contract with Cleveland. They're going to put down their Titleist and then pick up that Cleveland.
Great
unless their endorsement deal with Titleist is the same number. So they're quick to run for the money while on the endorsement side. It's not a big deal, and it's not going to change the scores.
Russ Evans, Peter Bernhardt with you. This is Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic, and we are in the middle of our PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Rope segment. We do it each and every week discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. And you were at PGA National last night enjoying some drinks and dinner at the Ironwood Grill in the I-Bar.
Yeah, that's a great setting. You know, we had some drinks before dinner out in the lobby area. It was very nice. And then after dinner, we went outside and sat on the balcony and had a nice rainstorm and lightning storm to watch.
Wow, it was treacherous last night. It was fierce. A lot of lightning bolts last night in South Florida. Scary stuff. My dog was barking most of the night, and that's not, of course, good for the baby. So the baby was up a lot last night as well. So it was a rough night in the Evans household. Anyway, topic number three. Listen to this. Next week at the U.S. Open, perhaps changing par during the tournament. Mike Davis has gotten plenty of praise for changes he has made since taking over as the USGA's Senior Director of Rules and Competition. Some of his good moves have been graduated rough and drivable par fours. Another idea he is mulling is varying par on a hole and a course during a championship. Quote, one thing I'm absolutely positive we'll do in the future, perhaps in 2015 at Chambers Bay, is play a hole certain days as a par four and other days as a par five. Mike Davis contends it wouldn't compromise what the USGA is trying to do at the Open. All we're looking for is the low 72-hole score, and that won't change, end quote. Peter, your thoughts?
My thoughts? They just played golf in a swamp at Bethpage Black, and they wouldn't play lift, clean, and place for the integrity of the game and the tradition of the game. I've never seen a tournament where they changed a hole from a 3 to a 4 or from a 4 to a 5 in mid-tournament.
Right.
So, to me, okay, if you're going to do that, then Mike Davis, it's time for the USGA to say, okay, when we're playing Bethpage Black in a swamp, we're going to play lift, clean, and place. If you're only looking for the low 72-hole score, it wouldn't have changed a thing.
I agree with you, Peter. I think I do. This is a little quirky to me. I've been all about the USGA and their thinking outside the box the last few years, and I think it's been brilliant what they've done, starting at Wingfoot in 2006 and then continuing at Oakmont in 07 and, of course, Torrey Pines last year and Bethpage this year, primarily with the drivable par fours. I love what they did with the 14th hole at Torrey last year. 3 days of the tournament, it played as a 440-yard par four, and then one of the days of the tournament, the final round, they shortened that by 150 yards and made it a 290-yard par four. But changing markers on a tee box is one thing. Changing par of the golf course is quite another, and I just think it's a little too quirky for my tastes. All right, fourth and final topic, Peter, and of course this is the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Rope segment. Russ and Pete with you on Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic. Seabonnet Golf Club in Long Island, New York. Not just the Jack Nicklaus Tom Doak designed course at Seabonnet that has people talking, so do the golf carts. Now, a decade ago, the Golf Cognoscenti went from metal spikes to soft spikes in an attempt to help the course conditions and therefore helping the environment, being eco-friendly perhaps. Well, now we've taken that a step further. Seabonnet has recently installed solar panels on the roofs of its carts to become the country's first golf club to employ an entire fleet of solar energy golf carts. The solar drive technology expected to reduce electricity consumption between 50 and 75%. Seabonnet going green, Peter.
I must have taken my ugly pills this morning. Because I'm about to rip Seabonnet on this. First of all, I was there 2 weeks ago. I wasn't playing Seabonnet, but I was playing next door at National. And when you're at National, which is one of the treasures of the United States, it's right next to Shinnecock, and you come up the 18th hole and you got this beautiful old clubhouse, and what smacks you in the face is this giant garish clubhouse that's Seabonnet. Now, what is the big deal about this? Nobody rides golf carts out there. Everybody walks. They've got caddies. How many golf carts did they actually put these solar powered on?
Maybe for the Rangers.
Yeah, right. What? They get this huge article, this press coverage over the fact they have solar golf carts. I bet those carts don't make 100 laps around that golf course a year. good for them.
I don't have any problem with that.
I don't either.
I think it'd be good if more, specifically maybe resorts like a PGA National that's got five courses and they've got a fleet of hundreds and hundreds of carts. Perhaps if they were to go to solar panel carts, that would make a huge difference on the carbon footprint. Now this buzzword in our lexicon of this society, carbon footprint, right? I think it's cool. It's a good idea, and it probably helps in the long run be more eco-friendly.
Yeah, here's the point, too, and that is if you've got to outfit 200 golf carts, or in Sabonic's case, they probably had to outfit maximum 20. And that, I mean, I can't believe they have 20 golf carts there. But so they did 20 golf carts, and you're talking about a membership where the initiation fee was like $350,000. It's not a big number, but for somebody like PGA National to do all of their golf carts,
sure,
it starts to become a big investment. A
lot more impact. Russ Evans, Peter Bernhardt with you. This is Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic, and that was our PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Rope segment. We do it each and every week discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa.